Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show, the home of militant moderation, where we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor, sitting in for Alan today. Please be sure to swing by our website at alannathan.com for our podcasts and our showtimes. Well, we're now about 2 weeks into the great media battle to rewrite history and gaslight you into thinking they weren't 100% complicit in hiding Joe Biden's mental decline. This is a huge story for the media. They will not let it go. And I'll tell you one of the big reasons why this is now 2 weeks now, you know, the big story in media with Jake Tapper out there flogging his ridiculous book that's trying to rewrite history and make it look like he was on the spot. You know, boy, he was right there. No, he wasn't. And everybody's calling him on it. That's why this has been going on for 2 weeks with no sign of slowing down, with news stories breaking every day. It's not working. And the big reason it's not working is that the mainstream media, the Democrat media, DNC media, as I like to call them, they have long ago lost the trust of the American people, and they no longer have a monopoly on the distribution of information. They simply do not control the conversation to the degree that would be necessary to fool you into not remembering what happened 1 year ago, 6 months ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. They can't do it anymore. And it's driving them crazy that they can't rewrite history and make you forget what they did to keep Joe Biden in office. Case in point, Tapper, Jake Tapper of CNN, goes on Megyn Kelly's show to flog his book, which was kind of an act of desperation. He did that because she's got an audience and he doesn't. And he's desperate now. And I'm sure his crisis PR firm that he hired told him he has to go out there and do something to keep this book alive because it's turning into a laughing stock. So he goes on Megyn Kelly, and Tapper repeats his usual song and dance about, you know, a couple of people, 5-6 people in the Biden White House fooled the entire media. And we're every bit as much victims as you are out there, American people. We got fooled, and Biden was fine up until 2023. And that's when they hornswoggled us. And Megyn Kelly just demolished him. I mean, absolutely destroyed him. She just pulled out video of everything Jake Tapper was actually saying in 2022, 2023. And she ran a couple minutes of video. And, you know, the reaction I'm seeing from people who watch this is they're giving Tapper credit for not bursting into tears. Because at that point, most people would have just disintegrated into gales of sorrow, you know, because they'd been ruined. I haven't seen somebody get mauled like that since that bear got a hold of Leonardo DiCaprio in that movie a couple of years ago. And Tapper took it, you know, tried to keep the interview going and tried not to melt. But it's clear that was a body blow that he wasn't really expecting. It is amazing that Tapper and these other people, they think we can't just pull out the video of all the stuff they were actually saying 2 years ago. You know, it's not like we have to go to some dusty archive and dig out ancient 8mm film or anything like that. We have all this stuff on the internet. We're 5 minutes away from finding out what they were actually saying in 2022 and 23 versus what Jake Tapper now claims they were saying, and seeing that it's completely different. And of course, this all became much more serious after the revelation of Joe Biden's cancer diagnosis, which was also hidden from the American people. Another act of fraud, another attack on democracy from the Democratic Party. They concealed Joe Biden's cancer. He knew about this before he ran the first time, kids. He knew about this before 2020. He knew he had a terminal illness, and they hid it anyway, because they needed to walk the old man into the White House and use him as a meat puppet so all these people could actually run the government behind the scenes in the shadows where you people don't actually get to see what's going on. There is zero chance, absolute zero chance, that Joe Biden did not know he had this dangerous prostate cancer evolution long before he now claims. You know, now they're saying they just found it yesterday or something. Ridiculous. Nonsense. Absolutely new. Now, in that case, the media, you might give them a little slack and say, well, they're not proctologists. You know, they couldn't go in there and study them for themselves and find out what they weren't being told. But not so fast, because as people are beginning to point out here, the signs that Biden's diagnosis was being hidden from the American public were obvious at the time. And some people on the right, conservative alternative media, did call that out and say, gosh, it's a little weird that Biden's results are being hidden, that his PSA tests are not being made public like every other president of the modern era. You know, so some flags were raised by actual journalists who are now found exclusively on the right among conservative media. There is no actual journalism on the left anymore. All they do is read press releases from the DNC, and that's the news. They wait for the morning email to come in, and that's what they do. You know, that's all they do. So they didn't look into this. There were signs. Real journalists would have been suspicious of this. Also, as people are pointing out, Biden actually blurted out that he had cancer a couple of years ago during a speech, and the press covered it. And you know what they said? They just said, oh, he was speaking metaphorically. Or it was a slip of the tongue. It was a little gaffe. He stutters. Joe Biden stutters. That's what it is. He stuttered. So, I mean, yeah, he actually blurted it out. And I guess his staff ran up afterwards and said, Joe, shut up. You're not supposed to tell anybody that you have cancer. And the media just dutifully looked the other way, you know, and let this slide. Do you remember during the campaign that was just concluded in 2024, do you remember what one of the big Democrat themes was? One of their stupid little slogans that they ran with? Democracy is on the ballot. Remember that? That was something they all started chirping like parakeets because they thought that was a winning play because Donald Trump is Hitler, you know. So they all started saying democracy is on the ballot. Well, as it turns out, it was, but it was the Democrat Party that's a threat to democracy. And that's not hyperbole. This was an absolute coordinated attack on the very soul of democracy to put Joe Biden in office and to keep him in office. And we don't even have to get into all the fishy hijinks that happened on election night in 2020. Although we probably should. I mean, we shouldn't let that go either. But even leaving aside the highly dubious election that actually installed him in office, he shouldn't have been there. He was not mentally or physically fit to be the president. And the Democratic Party launched an all-out attack on democracy to put Joe Biden in office to keep him there. Now, there is a procedure that's meant to be followed if you have a president who wins an election and he's not mentally or physically capable of continuing his duties. I mean, this is not an inconceivable circumstance. The founders knew it was a possibility, probably more so in their day and age because lifespans were shorter. Much more likely the president would become seriously ill while he was conducting his duties. So there was a procedure for getting rid of a president, for moving him out of the way and replacing him. And that procedure would have worked if the Democrat Party hadn't sabotaged it. They launched an all-out attack on the Constitution to lie to you, and the media was 100% complicit to lie to you and prevent anyone from beginning the process of removing Joe Biden constitutionally and putting someone else in his place. Now, who would that have been? Kamala Harris. Not a big improvement from the mental acuity standpoint, to be sure. But, you know, these days, Kamala Harris and her people are out there kind of whispering in the background of all this Biden cover-up drama, you know, we didn't have a fair shot. We had such a short campaign. They threw us in there too late, implying that maybe if they had made her the candidate much, much sooner, or even removed Biden from office and let her run as the incumbent, she would have had a better chance. I kind of doubt that because she's still Kamala Harris. And if there's one thing we know about her is that the more voters see her, the less they like her and the more they start laughing at her. So I'm not sure a longer campaign would have helped. But, you know, arguably, if she had been installed as the sitting president 2 or 3 years ago, when Biden was infirm, that would have been a lot of time for the Democrat political machine to build her up and make her an incumbent president. Who knows? Maybe she would have done better. We'll never know. It's quite a hypothetical. But that is what should have happened, no matter what you think of Kamala Harris. We do have a procedure for an infirm, mentally incapable president to be removed, and it should have been followed. Should have been followed after Afghanistan. I mean, that to me is the ultimate demolition of the media's new spin. It was obvious Biden was out of his mind during Afghanistan. He didn't know what to do. Remember what he actually did do when Afghanistan went pear-shaped? He ordered an airstrike that killed an innocent family because he panicked because there was a terrorist attack on American troops in Afghanistan, and he was afraid he'd look weak and maybe he'd get in trouble, maybe he'd get impeached. So he panicked and he launched this airstrike on poor, incomplete intel, and they wound up killing a bunch of children. And he's never been held accountable for that. Nobody in his orbit ever has been held accountable for that. It was obvious to everyone that Biden needed to be out of there after Afghanistan. It was incredibly dangerous. It put the American people at risk, the American government at risk, our way of life at risk, to keep Joe Biden in office after he was clearly mentally incompetent to hold the office. And the media did have a role to play there. When the Democrat Party covered it up because they wanted to keep their power and their loot, their money coming from all these grifts that we've been seeing exposed by the Department of Government Efficiency, all these slush funds that they feed off of, they needed to protect all that. So they kept Biden in office by hook or by crook. And the media, which will tell you all day and all night that they're an indispensable part of democracy, the guardians of truth. Well, democracy doesn't work without us, they say. Well, this was it, guys. This was your chance to step up and perform your sacred duty and inform the American people that the president of the United States was mentally and physically incapable. And what did you do? You helped the cover-up. Willingly, complicitly, you were part of the conspiracy. You failed at the test you told us you were all going to face one day, and we are worse off for it. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
It's no secret that everyone wants to live a healthier life, but how many of us really do what it takes to make that happen? A new book lays out easy steps you can take to bring you closer to that goal. Dr. Brian Clement is the author of Quantum Human, an easy-to-read guide to wellness that provides a historic and scientifically validated roadmap on how to stop aging, prevent disease, and getting the most out of life.
Our many years of research have led us to realize how important it is to pay attention to our foods, our thoughts, and the activities we participate in. And more important is our relationships and sense of community.
Dr. Clement's message is one of empowerment. He says that each of us can harness energy and raise our biofrequency through conscious actions. And by doing so, we can heal ourselves and contribute to a more harmonious and connected world.
It's no mystery in Quantum Human we have explored the science of energy healing and the human potential and show how everyone can improve their lives and take their health back.
For more information, visit BrianClementPhD.com.
It's been 5 years since the COVID-19 pandemic began, yet nurses continue to face significant stress and burnout. Brendan Martin, Research Director for the National Council of State Boards of Nursing, or NCSBN, has more.
The nursing community is facing persistent challenges, with nurses continuing to leave the field in record numbers. In fact, our 2024 National Nursing Workforce Study finds nearly 2 in 5 nurses plan to leave the profession by 2029.
More than 138,000 nurses left the profession since 2022, and a lot more nurses intend to leave the field within the next 5 years. Nurses face similar challenges across all levels and experience.
40% of nurses expressed that stress and burnout are among the top reasons for considering a job change. They also mentioned heavy workloads, understaffing, and feeling underpaid contributed to their desire to leave.
For more information on the National Council of State Boards of Nursing 2024 Workforce Study, visit ncsbn.org/workforce.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. Well, Israel has resumed military operations in Gaza against Hamas because Hamas did not have the rest of the hostages that it has been holding, and the Israelis are facing increasing pressure from around the world, including Pope Leo, the new pope, and even President Donald Trump, who has normally been very solidly behind the Israeli government, that they have to do more to ensure that food and medicine will get through to the civilians in Gaza and ease the suffering of the civilian population there. Here with us to talk about the situation in Israel is Pastor Mark Biltz, founder and senior pastor of El Shaddai Ministries in Washington State and author of the book America at War. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Hey, well, thank you so much. It's great being on your program.
This is clearly a very painful conflict in every possible sense of the word, because the Israeli government has made it clear Hamas is still a threat. They have to be dealt with, and it's impossible to do that without putting civilians at some risk. The Israelis also say they cut off a lot of the humanitarian shipments into Gaza because Hamas was killing them, and it was basically financing their efforts, and they had to put a stop to that. And yet now they're being condemned around the world and pressured heavily to pull back. Do you think this is going to work out in Israel's favor, or are they going to have to suspend this operation?
Well, I'm not sure it's going to work out in Israel's favor, but I hope they don't have to suspend the operation. What the whole world is blind to, if they're so concerned about the famine, why don't they pressure Hamas to give up the hostages? Hello? I mean, why are they putting all of the pressure because of the famine conditions, which that isn't totally true, but on Israel? My goodness, the reason they don't pressure Hamas is they know Hamas won't give in. They think that Israel will. But that's absolutely right, what you said. Hamas captures all of the food. They shoot the civilians who are trying to get it, then they sell it at exorbitant prices. And so Israel's trying to control the humanitarian aid so it actually gets to the people who needs it.
And you almost never hear about that from regular media. You have to kind of check with the Israelis or sometimes with American intelligence sources to tell you that's true. Hamas also runs a massive money operation in Gaza where the international aid comes in dollars, in American dollars. And Hamas is running the banks that turn that into local currency so that you can get your food. And they just take 30% right off the top and stuff it in their pockets. And when the Israelis complained about that, the world community just kind of blinks numbly and then says, oh, well, we have to have more humanitarian aid.
No, you're so right on. I just love it. You really got your facts and figures. You know, the thing that concerns me, honestly, is this June 2nd. The reason why I say this June 2nd is because this is when the United Nations is meeting in New York City to finalize a two-state solution. In Canada, the UK, France, everyone is pushing this two-state solution. Well, what people don't realize, June 2nd also on the biblical calendar is Sivan 6. That's the very day Moses ascended Mount Sinai and received the gift of the land. The same day that Moses received the gift of the land from God is the same day the UN is going to say it's invalidated. That isn't going to sit well.
And to put it mildly, that's going to be a tad awkward. And it also just seems like a ridiculous thing to pressure for after all that has transpired. We mentioned hostages not being returned. When Hamas did return some hostages and they were dead, they paraded the bodies through the streets like trophies. And this wasn't just Hamas. This is Palestinian civilians dancing around and handing out candy, the dead baby dance party, as people put it at the time, because it was so revolting. I mean, that is not a people you can hand a state to and then say, well, this will work out fine.
You're exactly right. And the reason why is they want to kill Jews. That's what their whole goal is. Their whole mission is to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. You can't make peace with someone like that. It is impossible. They have to destroy Hamas. And I think Iran needs to bomb Iran's nuclear facilities and their oil fields. Put them back in this. No, don't hurt the civilians per se, but at least get rid of their economic resources.
Well, you know, that's a tricky point, because it's basically impossible in the modern age to conduct warfare without civilians being put at risk. Even World War II, and not even Nagasaki and Hiroshima, a lot of civilians were killed in the process of subduing the Axis, and it's regrettable. It just had to be done. When you're fighting a terrorist enemy that mixes into a dense urban area with a huge civilian population, there's really no way to go after them without civilians being at risk. That's why they use human shields. They know it works.
Well, the other thing, though, is even though this has been urban warfare, and what you said is true, they've done the statistics even given to them from Hamas, and Israel has the lowest rate of citizen ratio to soldiers ever in history.
Even that is amazing. They get no credit for that. You never hear that unless you're hearing an Israeli ambassador or somebody talking about it. Absolutely zero credit in the media. And meanwhile, basically no standards whatsoever are applied to Hamas or to the Houthis in Yemen or to Iran or anybody else. They can kill Israeli civilians with impunity, and nobody criticizes them for deliberately targeting them.
Exactly. Oh, I just love your radio station. You're the best.
I'm just borrowing the seat today.
You're great.
I'm concerned about this a lot, not only for Israel and for the Palestinians. You know, there's human beings there in Gaza that we need to care about, as Pope Leo has been pointing out, but also because civilization itself has to pass this test. This is a test of everything we believe that Western civilization is built upon. And what happens in Gaza today could be happening in Toronto tomorrow or downtown D.C. It's something that we need to come to terms with as to how to fight a war against this kind of enemy. And we have to break their conviction that they'll inevitably win as long as they just keep killing people and they're never held to account for it, that inevitably the civilized enemy will give in because we won't be able to take it anymore.
No, you're right. This is why I wrote my book that people get on Amazon, America at War, 2024 through 2026. I in that book, in 2023, I wrote down that Iran would attack Israel in April of 2024. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And I also wrote we'd have terrorist attacks in the United States, which we've had. And I go through the rest this year and next year, and I lay out biblically, we're going to see terrorist attacks like you've never seen before here in the United States this year.
And also other parts of the world as well. India just weathered a devastating, brutal terrorist attack. You know, that almost caused a war between India and Pakistan.
Exactly.
I don't think that story's over yet. Yeah, it's a global challenge. And you mentioned Iran. Now, they've been trying over at the Trump administration to get a deal with Iran, and the Iranians keep acting like negotiations are going well. They're all chipper. And then the next day, the Ayatollah comes out and makes a prune face and says, no, this will never do. They're asking too much. We're never going to give up our uranium. Is that going to come to any kind of a deal, or is that inevitably going to be Israel and maybe us having to go in there and take out those uranium centrifuges?
Well, right now, in last night's newspaper, today's newspaper, Iran is ready to take them out even without America's support, because they're concerned about Trump's deal with Iran without them being involved in the negotiations. They're ready to bomb, who knows, could be this week.
I know some people in the Iranian resistance overseas who think the regime is actually the weakest it's ever been right now, and perhaps the most vulnerable to toppling. The disaster in Syria, the Gaza war did not go well for them. Their military was humiliated when they attacked Israel. There's never been a more ripe time for their government to tumble. And the thing that might get it started, not just this nuclear deal, could be the Ayatollah passing on, because he's not in great health. He's old. And if he retires or dies, maybe that will be the catalyst for real change in Iran. I'll give you the last word.
Oh, I totally agree with you. I just appreciate your program and all you're doing. Thank you.
Well, thank you very, very much for joining us today. Pastor Mark Biltz, founder and senior pastor of El Shaddai Ministries in Washington State and author of the book America at War. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor of Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
So Zuzu is the story of an adorable hermit crab that actually mistakes a piece of plastic for its shell. There's a short film on joinzuzu.com that is this extraordinary short film about Zuzu's story, but also there's a petition online where people can go and easily, in just moments, sign this petition to advocate for federal EPR legislation. This is so important because this allows us to create a national strategy of collective action to scale up a solution to fix the recycling problem in this country. So I partnered with S.E. Johnson on the Zuzu movement because S.E. Johnson is one of those rare companies that is out at the forefront of this issue and pushing to recognize that companies have a responsibility to play in the system. It's not just about consumers recycling. Companies and the products that they create need to be recyclable. They need to take responsibility for the life cycle of those products, and that's what S.E. Johnson is doing. Now, for more information, go to joinzuzu.com and sign the petition.
The fan favorite series Leverage Redemption returns for its third season April 17th on Prime Video. The show follows a team of reformed criminals who prove sometimes it's good to be bad as they use their less than legal skills to help those in need fight back against the rich and powerful. In season 3, the team pits themselves against a power broker stealing the town's clean water, a pool hustler with a side business in international extortion, and a corrupt mayor who's the judge and jury of his small town, all while dodging a plan of vengeance from a past enemy. But no matter what, when someone needs help, they provide the leverage. Elise Shannon plays Brianna Casey, a brilliant engineer and hacker.
Audiences will love this new season. It's filled with big surprises, major action, lots of humor, and as always, a lot of heart. My character Brianna is still learning about the world of cons, but she brings her own spin to everything, snarky humor, it's high tech, and she helps the team stop some truly awful people.
Don't miss Leverage Redemption, April 17th on Prime Video.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
This forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. We were talking about the media falling down on the job with Joe Biden earlier, and there's another media story, has nothing to do with Biden or politics, but this is hilarious and also scary and well worth mentioning as we talk about the deterioration of American media. It has to do with the Chicago Sun-Times, the venerable newspaper up in Chicago. And they have a feature that they do called The Best of Summer that tells you things to do, movies to go see, and so on. And part of it is the summer reading list, which is a list of books that you're supposed to read over the summer. So they suggest your beach reading, so to speak. That's something that was big a long time ago. I guess maybe it still is. In the digital age, you go out to the beach in the summer, you bring a book while you're getting a suntan. So here's your summer reading list for 2025. And the problem is that this year, the Chicago Sun-Times' summer reading list for 2025 was evidently written by an artificial intelligence, so it just made up a bunch of books that don't exist and told people to go out and read them. This is not a silly tweet. It's an article in the Chicago Sun-Times. They went all the way to publication on this article, and nobody noticed that half of the books that were supposed to be beach reads for the summer are not real. The AI just invented them. It did a pretty good job, too. It made up some plausible books, but they're not for real. And, of course, this is a massive embarrassment for the Chicago Sun-Times because there's non-existent books on their Books of the Summer reading list. And it's also raising alarm bells from those who are worried about artificial intelligence in general, and particularly the media, referring to artificial intelligence and getting lazy and letting it do their jobs. And what you're seeing here in the case of the phony books on the Chicago Sun-Times reading list is a persistent problem with AI that nobody has figured out yet. So AI, you know, for those who haven't really had a lot of exposure to it, we're not talking about the Terminator walking around here, not yet, anyway. AI is really just a very elaborate, sophisticated search algorithm. Just like Google, you know, you go search stuff in Google. That's what AI is, but it's turbocharged. And the thing that makes AI really powerful is that you can communicate with it in plain English, just like the old-timey TV shows where they would just say, computer, give me a list of Shakespeare's greatest hits, and it would just do that. You can do that now, literally. You could just, right now, you probably could do it from where you're sitting. You could just ask Alexa or something to give you a list of Shakespeare's greatest works, and it would just crank them out. So that's what AI does. And the thing that's great about AI, the potential, the power of artificial intelligence, is that it's a huge force multiplier for human labor. You don't have to do all the little grunt work. You can just say, give me this, and the AI will figure out how to do it. And that's great. When it works, it's amazing. One of the things that AI does that is just blowing people's minds is that you can tell it to conjure up a picture of anything that you can imagine. You can tell it what to put in there. You can tell it what style of art to use. You want a watercolor, you want a charcoal sketch, and it'll just instantly crank it out in a matter of moments. And it usually does a decent job. Sometimes it's kind of weird and scary, but you know, it's amazing how close it will get sometimes based on very simple commands. Now, you couldn't really do that any other way. Unless you're an artist, you know, if you're a very good artist, you could go in and make a charcoal sketch of Donald Trump catching a falling spaceship in a Superman outfit or what have you. But the AI will do that in 4 seconds flat and it'll look great. So it's kind of an amazing capability that we have here. But the problem is that everyone is getting a little fooled by the quality of that interface. And they're thinking the AI is like alive, like it's a living, breathing artificial being. We're not there yet. That would be real self-aware artificial intelligence. Maybe we'll never get there. Maybe we shouldn't get there. But no, these are just super tarted up search engines that you can talk to in regular English language. And one of the things that happens when you talk to an AI is that it goes looking for information based on other things that humans have told it. So when an AI answers your query, it goes out and it has to make value judgments. If you tell the AI, give me a list of Shakespeare's works, it'll probably do it accurately, pretty fast, you know, because that's a simple, straightforward, non-subjective question. It's a matter of fact what Shakespeare's works are. But if you tell it, give me a list of Shakespeare's 5 best plays, oh, best, what's that mean? Now it has to start making value judgments, and it will. But the only way it can do that is by looking at other queries, what other people have asked it, what other people have told it. It has to scan articles looking for best Shakespeare play, and it has to synthesize all of that into an answer for you. And that produces a phenomenon that AI researchers are calling hallucination, which is what happened in the case of the Chicago Sun-Times reading list. Now, who knows how this actually happened? I don't know how the people at this newspaper, who was the person that said, I don't want to do the best of reading lists. I'm going to ask the AI to do it for me, because I guess that's what happened. We'll never really know unless they decide to publicize what went wrong here. But presumably at some point in this process, somebody told the AI to give it the most popular or hotly anticipated maybe books of summer 2025. I'll bet that's what the question was. Give me the most anticipated books for the summer of 2025. And the AI said, okay. And it went out there and it had to figure out what was anticipated. And it started hallucinating, because that's what it does. When you ask AI for information that is not rock solid objective reality, when you're not just asking it what's 5,000 Chinese yuan in US dollars, that's just a calculation. Boom, done. Here's your answer. When it's anything other than that, it has to start making value judgments and studying relations between chunks of data, and it hallucinates. So basically, the AI starts thinking that there had to be this new book from this new author because it saw people talking about the author and talking about liking this kind of book. And it put two and two together and said, well, this guy must be getting ready to release this hot new science fiction novel. And it just made it up and put it out there. AIs do this kind of thing all the time. And in theory, when human beings catch them doing it, they incorporate that into their programming. So if an AI ever hallucinates on you and it gives you a bunch of nonsense when you ask it a question, you can tell it that's not true. And it should theoretically say, oh, my bad, and update its programming. And that's why AIs are constantly growing and getting better. They're refining their results based on your answers. But that process is a little imperfect and a little subjective. You know, what happens if somebody goes out there and says, give me a list of the five most important science fiction shows of the 1960s, and somebody who really hates Star Trek decides not to leave that in there, or they quibble with the AI and say, nah, Star Trek sucks. Well, now the AI has to change a whole lot of relational data, because this person has told it that Star Trek isn't good, but everybody else told it Star Trek was important. So what's it supposed to do? It starts hallucinating. It can't reconcile the incorrect human input with what it knows to be true. And it starts coming up with stuff to fill the blanks. Now, quite apart from the AI not doing a great job in compiling the summer reading list of 2025 for the Chicago Sun-Times, is the question of the media relying on AI to do journalism, which is a terrible idea, but they're doing it. Increasingly, the media is relying on artificial intelligence to do things like this, to fill in the gaps, to do a little grunt work that otherwise would have been time-consuming, and it's using AI to do research and missing obvious things that should not have been missed, and it's getting lazy. This is an outgrowth, to my thinking, of the way the media got so dependent on social media over the last 10, 15 years. If you've looked at the report of the press lately, you'll notice that reporters spend a lot of time on social media. Most of them are big time. Jake Tapper, we talked about earlier at CNN, that guy lives on social media. Like, he spends all his time. At one point, he used to be scrolling through his Twitter feed while he was on the air, looking for people talking about him. So, I mean, reporters spend all day on social media, but they move in fairly tight bubbles. So they don't know what they don't know. They spend their time on lefty social media, so they know what all the hot left-wing voices are saying, but they're almost completely ignorant of what's happening outside the left-wing bubble. So they don't know what ordinary Americans are saying or thinking or what they believe, and they certainly don't know much about conservatives. It's made them more insular, which is too bad, because it seemed like for a while there, the blogging revolution that got me started as a writer was going to make the left less insulated, because reporters would start being exposed to conservative thought. And it kind of worked for a while. Every now and again, CNN would quote me or something. You know, you'd see they were reading my stuff and you would think, hey, they're finally paying attention to conservatives. This is great for everybody. It's going to make things better. But it didn't last, because they wound up going to social media and they wound up curating their feeds. So now they were exposed only to information that confirmed their biases, just like the AIs. The media does the same thing that this AI did that worked for the Chicago Sun-Times. They hallucinate.
They invent data that isn't true to fit their biases and preconceptions. And because they can't imagine any argument outside of what they have been told is acceptable. So they just hallucinate things. And those hallucinations often pop out of the mouths of reporters live on the air, or they even get worked into articles the media was putting a lot of effort into. You know, they're reviewed by editors before they get published. So this is amazing to watch AI start doing what the media has always been doing now for decades, but it's just getting worse. Instead of being made better by their exposure to huge amounts of information, the media is getting worse, more insulated, more bubbled, and more incapable of thinking outside of its box, even when it's wrong. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
A new national survey reveals a surprising gap between what Americans believe about dental care and what they actually do. Many say they want to keep their natural teeth for life, but their habits often don't match that goal. Dr. Stephen Katz, president of the American Association of Endodontists, explains.
Most adults say they care about keeping their natural teeth, and nearly 9 in 10 believe flossing is important. But almost 60% don't floss daily, and more than 2 in 5 wait to see a dentist until they're already in pain. These delays can lead to serious dental problems.
Tooth pain doesn't have to mean tooth loss. When problems do arise, there's hope and help from a dental specialist known as an endodontist to help save your natural teeth.
That's correct. Endodontists are specialists in saving natural teeth through root canal therapy. With the right care, even a tooth that hurts or is infected can frequently be saved. But the key is acting early. Don't wait for pain.
Learn more at findmyendodontist.com. A new AARP fraud report highlights the need for better cybersecurity habits. Kathy Stokes is the director of fraud prevention programs with AARP's Fraud Watch Network.
Fraud is becoming increasingly sophisticated, yet many Americans may still be unaware of habits that can decrease their risk. Now, millions of adults have downloaded unverified apps, or they've taken social media quizzes from questionable sources, and millions have yet to enable multi-factor authentication, which is an easy step that offers additional protection for online accounts.
The good news is that protecting yourself doesn't require a tech background.
Simple steps like updating your passwords, using a VPN on public Wi-Fi, and turning on security features can help keep your information safe.
For more on how to protect yourself from the latest scams, visit aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork. That's aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Are you excited about being a new grandmother?
Of course I am. A little intimidated, too.
Why?
Taking care of a baby today is so different than when I had you.
But, Mom, you did great with me.
Thanks, son. But I put you on your stomach to sleep.
Right. But now we know that babies should always be placed on their backs to sleep for naps and at night to reduce the risk of sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS.
Hmm. You also slept with blankets and toys in your crib.
True. But now we know to keep everything out of the crib except for my sweet baby girl. No blankets, pillows, or other soft or loose items.
Daddy's going to teach Nana all the ways to keep you safe while you sleep. Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
For more tips on safe sleep for babies, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. That's safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. President Donald Trump is putting a big push in to get his big, beautiful reconciliation bill passed. He addressed the Republicans in Congress yesterday on that score, and he was pretty angry at the holdouts. There are people he referred to as factions in the Republican Party that are stopping the bill for one reason or another, and he basically told them to get their minds right and get this bill passed, or it's going to be a disaster politically for them and for the country economically. Here with us to talk about it is Alfredo Ortiz, president and CEO of Job Creators Network and co-host of the Main Street Matters podcast. Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
It's crunch time here for the budget reconciliation bill, and the president was unsparing in his criticism of some of the people that are Republicans that are holding out against it. And a lot of conservatives don't like this bill, and there are things in it that they find very objectionable, the lack of spending cuts, the SALT deduction, which basically forces red states to subsidize big spending blue states. They don't like any of that. But Trump's point to the Republicans was that we have to get this done now, because if we don't, there's going to be a crisis and a disaster, and you're going to get blamed for it.
Well, in the words of Ronald Reagan, there you go again. I mean, absolutely. It's the good old factions trying to make names for themselves. This Mike Lawler guy, for example, some unknown representative in New York that represents the SALT caucus, I guess, wanting to get more for his constituents because that's what they voted him in for. And I go, no, they voted you in to make sure we get tax cuts. And by the way, so if we don't get this bill done, there will be a tax increase, the biggest tax increase in history on every single American. So he's so worried about his reelection in 26 that he's willing to basically tank this bill if necessary. And he doesn't realize that he will lose his reelection because the whole country will be in an economic decline if we don't get this tax bill done.
Now, the argument we hear from the blue state Republicans who are part of this SALT caucus is that if they don't push hard for this, they won't get reelected. Their constituents will turn on them. This is something they have to do in order to stay in office. And nothing good will get done if their seats are taken by Democrats and give the Democrats a majority.
Well, look, I mean, bottom line is if we get this tax bill, and we will get this tax bill to the desk of the president by the 4th of July for him to sign, all of America will be celebrating not only our independence, but really independence from higher taxes and getting more cash in people's pockets. Our small business owners, for example, have a huge, huge benefit from this bill. The deduction goes from 20% to 23%. That's a huge, huge increase there for a benefit from them. And again, that's a deduction increase from 20% to 23%. And the bill also restores 100% immediate expensing. I will tell you that every single small business owner that took advantage of that opportunity has done tremendous, tremendous growth and has seen tremendous growth in their businesses by doing so because they're able to reinvest in their businesses and take the benefit the same year that they did. So there's some real, real solid things, and not to mention things that are going to help just the everyday American. I mean, no taxes on tips, no taxes on Social Security, up to a certain phase-out number. I mean, these are all real benefits to the American public.
Now, I've seen some criticism of no tax on tips, for example, that it's just a populist gesture and that most of the people that would be affected by it are already making more than the average wage for people that don't make tips. So why should they get special treatment? But it polls well. When you say no tax on tips, it really looks like you're caring about the hardworking little guy and they love it. But there's a lot of argument that it isn't really that economically significant.
Well, it is significant. I mean, you talk to the service workers and folks, you know, for example, that, you know, my gym instructor or anybody else like that, for example, they operate on tips. This is their livelihood. So this is really important. Or your hairdresser down the street. I mean, this is what they literally live on. So being able to have that opportunity to have no taxes on tips, no taxes on overtime. I mean, these are significant savings and more dollars to the American worker.
Well, some people said at the outset of this reconciliation fight, all they really needed to do was lock in the Trump tax cuts, which is what may expire if they don't get this done, and repeal Joe Biden's ridiculous Inflation Reduction Act, which was a sickening cash grab that had nothing to do with reducing inflation. Those two things would have just fixed a great deal of what's wrong with the economy. But for some reason, we end up in this complicated fight.
Well, that's true. I mean, obviously, that would have been the minimum level, right, to just continue to extend the Trump tax cuts. But there were opportunities to do more for our small business owners, for example, which is exactly what we did. So, for example, the immediate expensing that I just mentioned, there was a little geeky thing about it, but it was being phased out over the years since 2017. So it would have only been 20%, for example, that would have been able to actually be deducted, not the 100% expensing. And so now we get 100% expensing as a permanent opportunity there. So these are great things for the investment for our economy. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about the deficit and stuff like that and what the impact is going to be the deficit. But remember, a lot of that discussion is related to what's called static scoring. Basically, you don't give benefit to what we know is a fact, which is revenues will increase when taxes get cut because people invest in their businesses, they grow their businesses. And the estimate is somewhere between $4 and $5 billion of increase in revenues, $1 trillion, which would be more than enough to pay for the tax cut itself.
The bipartisan love affair with small business seems to have ended abruptly during the coronavirus pandemic. All of a sudden, they're not really discussed as much as they used to be at all, and it only seems to be people on the Republican side that care about them in the slightest.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, 100%. I mean, it was unbelievable how Kamala Harris would say, you know, I really care about small businesses and stuff like that, and you'd hear Joe Biden and the Biden administration talk about how much they care about small businesses. If they cared about small businesses, they wouldn't have put over $2 trillion of regulations on the economy, and they wouldn't have done a lot of the ridiculous things that they were trying to do during the coronavirus and a lot of the mandates and stuff like that. One of the mandates, which we actually sued all the way up to the Supreme Court, to stop.
Now, assuming Trump gets his way and the big, beautiful bill goes through, what would you suggest the Republican caucus do to goose their reelection chances in the midterm? What should they say we're going to do next? This is done. What's our top objective for the next reconciliation?
Well, so first of all, what we do is we do a horrible job of celebrating our wins and actually making people aware of that. If you notice, actually, not as many people were aware of the benefits that they received from the first round of tax cuts back in 2017. So I think one of the things they need to do, which the Democrats do tremendously well, is they actually go out and they celebrate and they talk about their wins. And that's what we need to do. We need to let the American public know of all the benefits, and we need to know that taxes actually work. And it's not just for millionaires and billionaires. It is for the average American, the average hardworking small business.
Now, the Freedom Caucus would be the other big holdout faction. I'll give you the last word here. What should the Freedom Caucus be doing that would be constructive at this point?
Vote for the bill.
That simple, because really, you know, President Trump made that case very forcefully yesterday. If they don't get this done, all the bad things that happen are going to be blamed on them. And that is going to make life very difficult for the rest of Trump's first term. Alfredo Ortiz, president and CEO of Job Creators Network and co-host of the Main Street Matters podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, your guest host today. Thanks very much for joining us on this hour of the Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.